Hello, it's the Hulkcast, an Aston Villa podcast. I'm James Rushton, joined again by Danny Reiser. Aston Villa have played their last match on English soil, Danny, until they kick off their Premier League fixtures against Tottenham Hotspur. It's an amazing feeling, but it means we're coming to the end of these good times that pre-season have brought. We beat Charlton on the weekend and we smashed Walsall midweek. We head to Leipzig next weekend before facing Tottenham the weekend after. It's all happened so fast, and I guess the major feeling here, Danny, for Aston Villa fans is that we're optimistic now.
Yeah, I think we're optimistic. First of all, hello everybody, thanks for tuning in. I think we're optimistic now, because I think this has been one of the most exciting pre-seasons that we've had in quite a while. I think we're unbeaten as well in pre-season, if you don't include the 2-1 defeat to the Kuwait national team, which of course was against a mixed side that we put up. But yeah, look, I mean, it's been against smaller opposition, albeit. We haven't really had a major test just yet. But having said that, we're pretty much thrashing most of these sides that we're playing against. And, you know, these are strong teams in the sense that they're competitive football league teams. It's just good to see that some of the signings that we've brought in are linking up really well together. Some better than others.
Well, yeah, that's what it was all about, right? This whole squad churn we had heading into this summer, it was a big worry. We'll have to field basically a whole new defence. You know, we wouldn't get Tammy or Tuanzebe back. That was a big story, and it looks like things are starting to gel. It's only pre-season, but it looks like a really stress-free, carefree time to enjoy Aston Villa's football. The big fear, Danny, was that we was going to restrict our play. Villa would have to change their style under Dean Smith. So far, it doesn't look like, in pre-season anyway, it doesn't look like they've changed their style.
No, but I think we'll get a better understanding for that once they've played Leipzig. I think so far there's been no reason to sort of sit back against the likes of Walsall or Charlton, because even if you are trying to test a deeper style of play where you're not attacking so much, it only really works if you're up against a team which has a strong attack. If you're a side that's not going to be incredibly confident against us, then there's no real need for Villa to play deep. There's no real way that it will sort of come together. I'm sure Dean will have to make some sort of adjustments. You know, I mean, when we're playing our first Premier League game against Tottenham Hotspur, but for now, yeah, it's good to see that we're still driving forward, and the DNA of the club has basically stayed the same since Dean took over.
It's good to see. It's really good to see how we're nailing down these kind of basics again with all these new faces and getting out there and playing some football. The way Aston Villa have kind of developed that style under Dean Smith, and we'll get some news out of the way. We've got a fair bit to go through. Mm-hmm. Firstly, this is probably the last Hulkcast of its type, Danny, because me and you, we've signed up now to SB Nation's, or we've been scouted, I guess, and brought up to the big leagues, and that will be an SB Nation podcast, a proper one. So it means I can't swear, and we have to be very professional.
Yeah, of course. You know, I don't anyway. But yeah, it's good. I'm glad that, you know, we've up to the Premier League now, so obviously people want to hear a bit more professionalism, and I'm sure that that's what we're going to provide you with more of, but without any of the banter, isn't that right, James?
Yeah, we won't be losing the banter. It's just more of a Diet Coke version. It's just as good. You won't be missing out, but there's none of the crap, I guess, associated with it. But yeah, serious news, mate. We've signed Douglas Luiz. He's pending a work permit. But last time we spoke, we didn't really know if it was going to happen or not because of the way it was delayed. But yeah, we have signed Douglas Luiz. Hopefully that work permit comes through. It looks like it probably will, because Villa have made that case. But Douglas Luiz comes in as kind of either a defensive midfield type or a rotation option with John McGinn. He can do a lot in midfield. He can play all three positions, actually. So it's a really encouraging signing for Aston Villa. He's a Brazilian under-20 captain. So there's a lot of pedigree here coming into Villa.
Oh, yeah, look, I'm really excited for him. I think we all knew that he was coming sort of since the last podcast, but it's great to see that we finally got him. Now, I think there is a buyback clause, which is something that we were wondering about before, but it seems to be confirmed now. Look, well, what we've got here is at least for the next season, we've got our defensive midfield position sorted. We've got the other guy basically sorted, because we know that John McGinn and Jack Grealish aren't going to get displaced. They're too good, and their chemistry together has been immense, obviously since they started playing with each other, but also sort of throughout the whole of pre-season. we were always wondering who that other guy was going to be. Now, let's just hope that Douglas Luiz gets some game time before the season starts. And hopefully, that's the midfield trio we're going to see.
Well, it's funny you say that about John McGinn, because in the last kind of day or so, the news has come out that Alex Ferguson, his influence, of course, his influence at Manchester United has increased, of course, since Manchester United have fully went in on the Ole Gunnar Solskjaer project. Alex Ferguson, a big fan of John McGinn, wants the club to sign John McGinn. It seems there is something there, because Ferguson is friends with John McGinn's grandfather. You know, it's a Scottish footballing establishment, really, and they're all, you know, speaking to each other. They're always talking to each other. These things happen. And Alan Nixon, a journalist for The Sun, of course, connected to these because he's Scottish as well. They all know each other. They're all speaking to each other. John McGinn's in the conversation about a move to Manchester United. Will it happen? Won't it happen? 50 million is the asking price, mate. It's a big thing. It could just be a rumour, but the conversation seems to be happening.
I don't think we know what the asking price is. I think 50 million for him it's a strong amount. I think what we'll have to see if United do go in for John McGinn is a huge offer put on the table, because they've already shown that they're paying over the odds sort of for certain players, right? That's no offense, by the way, to the winger they've signed, obviously, and Aaron Wan-Bissaka. But, you know, Wan-Bissaka obviously was it 40-odd million? 50-odd million? Something like that? Transfermarkt have the fee at 49.5 million. That's according to Transfermarkt.
This John McGinn thing has been there for a while. The rumour has been there, but there seems to be that little bit more grounding now that Alex Ferguson's name has been mentioned, because this is coming from the Scottish footballing establishment, right?
Yeah, but I can't see it happening this season. There's no way it's going to happen within the next month or so. I can't see it anyway. I think, you know, for Villa to have been preparing all that time for the coming season, knowing that Grealish and McGinn are going to be that partnership in the centre, I cannot see John McGinn just kind of moving over to United, especially with United being a little bit of a blur at the moment. You don't quite know where they're going to be, and John McGinn's not going to quite know whether he's going to make it straight into that team. I think you can see him sort of at least sticking around for the next season or so, and his price probably goes up. United going for him next summer, fine. But at the moment, it seems like it would be a big risk for Villa to just ship him off.
Yeah, it'd be a shock, that's to say the least. But a bit of marvellous news, mate, is that Nakamba is joining from Club Bruges. Of course, this was a Holtcast exclusive that we were quite... Honestly, I was bricking it because I thought...
It was a James Rushton exclusive.
I've been had here. I've been absolutely had. But no, we reached out to the agents and they said a move was underway. And this was when that Belgian paper that kind of got those exclusives from Club Bruges about Wesley and Marvellous in the first place. And they said it's not happening anymore. And I went, oh my God, I've been absolutely had. But it turns out it looks like a done thing. The medical, as we record on Monday, is happening later today. Fingers crossed it goes through, because then Villa will have another midfield all-rounder, a player who likes to kind of go forward, but he's definitely focused on his defensive capabilities. Marvellous Nakamba will be the second defensive midfielder that we sign. And it's a tricky question there, mate, because then you have three players who, you know, they have the talent to start. You've got Conor Hourihan. That left foot can do some damage. Douglas, of course, has that Brazilian pedigree, all the hype. And Nakamba, a proven defensive quantity.
Oh yeah, listen. We've got such a strong set of midfielders now. Such a strong set of midfielders, as you say, McGinn, Grealish, Douglas Luiz, Nakamba as well, and then you've got Hourihan. You're almost worried that he might become the forgotten man. Let's hope not. And then you've also got Lansbury, who's hungry for playtime, man. It's gonna be crazy.
You know, these players were hyped. Bjarnason had a few good games in preseason. So there's a lot of quality here that we're discussing in these terms. And it's all up in the air. You're not going to know these lineups until we start playing football. But it looks Villa are very rich in midfield right now. And it's a good position to be in. I mean, we are spending big money and it will probably continue. We do probably need a striker and a goalkeeper to seal this off. We've still got a week or so left, or 2 weeks. Let's see where it goes.
Yeah, let's see how it goes. And I think if we get Nakamba sorted, then fantastic. I watched a little bit of him in the African Cup of Nations, so it's very energetic. I'm very excited to see how he works in a Dean Smith midfield. I can see him working well. But now we've got so much talent from so many different positions of the world right now. I'm happy to see a strong African influence, as well in the Villa team. That's another thing that I'm really excited about. But yeah, for now, man, got to be positive about that midfield. I think it's the strongest entity that we have, so to speak, inside that squad.
Well, yeah, it showed its stuff against Warsaw, mate. We beat Warsaw 5-1 midweek. Did you get a chance to watch that on the old YouTube?
Yeah, yeah. No, I watched highlights of the Warsaw game on YouTube. I couldn't watch it live, but I mean, the whole match is back up online. They've put the whole thing up, so there's plenty to see there. But yeah, this was basically the game where Cotter just went on a mad one.
He really showed his stuff. So we played Minnesota and it was kind of an opening exhibition match. Then our first real friendly against Shrewsbury, bit of a tough ask, them coming back with the lack of fitness. Warsaw was a real showcase of Villa's footballing ability. Of course, it's just pre-season, but Cotter, you know, almost a forgotten man. This is the guy we signed before all the splurge happened. This was the guy we traded Gary Gardner and a few quid for. And he comes in. He plays the right wing position. He's flitting around with Grealish and Wesley up front. He's doing the business. He's really getting involved in directing the football. The guy looks a serious talent. A serious talent.
He's going to be a key player next season. He really is.
The positions he gets in for these goals, mate, the tap-ins, it's like, there's all the laugh about, you know, oh, the tap-in merchant. But the guy's getting into these positions where he can do nothing but score.
I think it will be Cotter and El Ghazi. I really do think that for most people before these games, the idea was that it's going to be Trezeguet and El Ghazi. But you're right. Look, Cotter's been brilliant. I mean, he reminds me of sort of David Silva in a way. You can play on the right side, but he's very, very strong through the center. Gets in these positions. His positioning is brilliant. He also knows how to link up with the forwards to kind of manufacture an opening and manufacture a chance as well. The two goals that he scored in that Warsaw game were very different. Obviously, one was a bit of a tap-in that he managed to get into position for. The other one, he manufactured himself almost. And then his link-up play with Wesley was brilliant too. And you really hope that they kind of just have that sort of chemistry with each other.
Wesley really was something else in that match as well. He bagged two. I think the goal of focus really is that penalty when he did that stutter step for about 5-6 seconds. And you think, hang on, he's going to miss this. The guy almost took the crossbar and the net off.
I don't want Wesley taking the penalties next season.
That was a very nervy penalty and it was a friendly.
I'll be honest. Yeah, yeah. He didn't look very, it didn't look very clean.
Well, the guy was quality, man. The guy was quality. The link-up play, the holding the ball. Look, the ability to put your head up and choose a pass when you're on for a hat-trick, and he did it three times before he went for it himself. You know what I mean? Bringing in Lansbury, bringing in Hotter, bringing in Grealish as well. The ability to kind of look up, go, hang on, I'm not going to go for glory here. Make the pass inside and hope they can score. It didn't come off right, but he was on a hat-trick, and it's just... That ability to be unselfish is so valuable. I do like a striker who is going to, you know, have the confidence to go on and take it themselves. But it's an underrated ability to look up, look round, make that pass to the player who's cutting in for the obvious goal. I really rated him for that. And look, that cross he made for Grealish, the way he ran so far out of position to get onto a lost cause, then cut it across the box for Jack to tap in. Really good stuff.
Yeah, yeah, brilliant. He ran that game. He ran that game on his own. Cotter. Let's just hope that he can do it in this Premier League opposition. I think from what I've seen from him, he's got footballing intelligence. For whatever reason, it didn't quite work out for him at Birmingham, but perhaps that's because they weren't quite suited to his style of play. They were very much sort of centered around having two forwards who were going to bang in goals, basically. It was very, very 4-4-2, you know, with Jutkiewicz and whatnot they had up there. But I can see him now in a team where he knows the system. And where he's got good chemistry with the manager in Dean Smith, I can really see Cotter, you know, going on and being a key player for us. I genuinely see him sort of being alongside Grealish as our best player.
big shout, mate, but he has really proven himself so far in pre-season. The next match we played, of course, was just this weekend, Saturday, against Charlton Athletic. 4-1 win. Loyal Taylor got the penalty after Ezri Konsa made a quite silly foul. El Ghazi scored. McGinn scored two. One of those goals was fantastic. Andre Green got his first goal of pre-season. First appearance of Trezeguet. And then Villa shirt, Al Mohammadi came back. Bjorn Engels actually started for Villa in the Warsaw match. And that was it was good to see him. So all these new faces gelling and looking really good footballers, mate. It looks like everything is going so well so early on.
Yeah, no, it's good. I think they seem to know each other quite well already. They don't look like strangers on the pitch. I think that's one of our worries. I think that's something you've got to be worried about, because in the relegation season, of course, we had so many sort of new faces who didn't quite know how to play with each other. This is going to take a lot, basically, from some of the guys who are already there. You know, Grealish and McGinn are going to have to be, you know, serious leaders in that dressing room. I think the same with Mings in there as well. Basically, the guys from next season need to sort of lead this team and just bring everybody else in. It is a worry. I think, you know, we heard some quite interesting stuff said by Sam Allardyce about the fact that Villa had brought in players from so many different nationalities and religions, quite weirdly. but whilst it wasn't quite worded in the best way, I can understand where his concern lies. You know, we've got so many new players in there, James, from so many different parts of the world. And by that, I mean different leagues and different, you know, different styles of football. I mean, can you see it gelling early enough?
Well, yeah, I appreciate Sam's comments because he's an experienced football man. He does know more than us. We do like to go on the podcast and dispute their opinions. These guys have been around that industry for a long time. They are speaking with some kind of experience. However, I do think Dean Smith is an inclusive footballing manager. He isn't in charge of these signings, right? He has a say in them, but he isn't the guy signing off. That we have a director of football and a CEO who do that. They handle that business. But he is welcoming these players, and he seems like he's enjoying the opportunity to have these players delivered to his doorstep. Like Tim Sherwood, on the other hand, didn't seem like he really wanted to use Jordan Vera to... He didn't seem really enamoured by using the dressing room. He didn't really... You saw all the comments come out about we had a French section of the dressing room and an English section.
He didn't need that.
Like Tim Sherwood, that was his job to kind of sort that out. And he didn't. And it forced us into some really sticky situations that we never actually recovered from a few years. But learning these lessons, Dean Smith seems like the type of figure who's going to bring all these people in, you know. And it's not like they come in on their own. Wesley is going to link up with Marvelous Nakamba. He's got a Brazilian player there as well. Trezeguet plays with Al Mohammadi in the international team. Bjorn Engels comes in wanting to play this style of football. There are reasons these players have been brought, and they all seem to fit in their own little ways.
Yeah, it's almost like they've all got buddies, isn't it? In a way, yeah. All of those players are connected in some way or another.
Well, targeting Grealish as well. I think it's England youth levels. You know, everything works.
Oh, yeah. Interesting, that one.
Everything works. Ezri Konsa's been with Dean Smith before. Everyone fits in perfectly. I think there's very few players you look at and go, there is no connection.
No, definitely, definitely. I think, I don't think we're going to have a problem with it. I genuinely don't. I think that... what we've essentially got is we've got a system, and we're a team that have a system, and that's the way it should be. And you basically pick the right man for that for each position within that system. And as long as they do their job well, there shouldn't be an issue. I think that's the kind of club that we need to be as well, because especially nowadays where big clubs are picking up players, you know, for big money and basically just taking the core players out of mid-table teams, we're going to have to learn to be able to replace players, because in the past we haven't been able to do that. And I think
I've got sort of faith in us being able to do that, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. We should become an Atletico Madrid in a way. Every time a player leaves, we should be able to pick somebody else to do that job. Our scouting seems to be brilliant, but we're never going to know, are we, until next season?
You're exactly right. Nakamba, according to Greg Evans, of course, I think he's newly signed for The Athletic, that big soccer kind of digital broadsheet that's coming out you have to pay a subscription fee for. He said that Nakamba's been on Villa's system for a few years. So
oh, really?
It seems like we're using on the knowledge that already exists in the club as well, rather than disregarding it.
Yeah, good.
Which is a good sign.
So when are we going to go back in for David Villa?
I think it's far too late for that now. what's his name? Kiyotake.
get Kiyotake in.
Let's go back to Charlton because the first goal was there's a few fantastic goals in this match, mate. But the first goal, Al Ghazi making that cutting run and Grealish making the pass just beyond the defender and out of reach of the goalkeeper for Al Ghazi to loop around the back of the defender and slice it in. It's a very good goal and it highlights what Villa are all about. You've got Keenan Davis, the perfect hold up man. He's playing instead of Wesley. And Keenan Davis brings it back in for Grealish, who sneaks it through to Al Ghazi. And it's just that system is what Villa are all about. The wingers are going to be the ones scoring the goals this season. So hopefully they can deliver. So far, it looks like they have. Al Ghazi comes in, slips it in, 1-0 up.
Yeah, Davis, by the way, is a weird one there because I disagree with the fact with the idea that we need to loan him out because it's not that he's not ready for the Premier League at all because he's physically there. Do you know what I mean? I think it's. I think with him, it's going to have to be a case of you're going to be the other guy. If you impress, then perhaps you'll get in. And I haven't got a problem with that with a player of his age. I think at least he does one thing very, very well, and that is hold at play. And if we've got guys like El Ghazi and Hotter and Trezeguet on the wing, guys who like cutting in, that's not necessarily the worst thing in the world. And as you say, El Ghazi, good to see him get on the score sheet there.
Well, Keenan Davis, more on him, he makes holding up the ball look like an art form. Like, I've always thought there is something special about the way Davis holds up the ball because he allows so much to happen because he can hold off any player. No matter who it is coming in from, he can seemingly hold them off for an infinite amount of time. And that is a valuable skill. And it's made me have the thought that, hang on, if Keenan Davis has to play every game next season for whatever reason, he could literally score no goals and still be such a massive asset.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. He is that kind of player. And I hate to make the obvious comparison, but it's a bit like what Heskey did back in the day. I know he wasn't great for us, but it's a bit like what made Emil Heskey so good as a player. As much as we joke about how he used to sort of miss all the time, he'd bring other players in, and Keenan Davis could do this as well with a left foot too, which is always a plus.
He's always got a trick on him as well. He's got a nice turn. He always seems to want to beat a man as well, and he's got the strength to do it. He can move, yeah. Absolutely, and I'm really impressed from what I've seen, especially that Charlton match. He made so much happen for Villa, and I'm not saying that Wesley can't hold up the ball or Tammy Abraham couldn't. There's a way Keenan Davis holds up the ball that it's almost better in a way. It almost seems to work a little bit better.
Yeah, definitely, and I think it'll just be another option. You know, if we're playing against a team with, say, three at the back and we need to bring in our wingers a little bit more, then he might be the guy to go to.
Another impressive goal. I'm going to skip John McGinn's first and we'll talk about Andre Green after. John McGinn's last goal, mate, was something special. The press that he puts out on the wing, gets the ball, cuts inside. He rides a challenge, rides another one, goes around the goalkeeper and just smashes it in at full pelt. And that is peak John McGinn.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And it made it onto mainstream Twitter as well, didn't it? Past Villa Twitter, basically. It went round because it was such a good goal. The way, I don't know how he found the space to get around the keeper.
If there's a player who makes it onto mainstream Twitter out of all, more often than all the other Villa players, it is John McGinn because of the goals he scored and when he slammed his head off the Wembley turf when he did the belly slide.
What's funny is the other goal that he scored was sick. That was a rocket. But this was such intricacy. And we've seen John McGinn do it. And that's why, as you say, you know, the interest has kind of like come up for him for out of nowhere. People are like, oh, hang on a minute. This guy's pretty good. He's almost ignored when people watch Scotland because everybody's like, oh, yeah, Scott McTominay, let's watch this. You know, John McGinn's brilliant. He will go on to be a very, very good player. He already is, probably. I'm not surprised teams are sniffing around him, man, to be honest.
John McGinn runs after the ball like me when a £5 note drops out of my pocket and the wind blows it away.
Yeah.
He's got a very unique style of running, and it is, you know, the Premier League isn't ready for him. I really think this is his year. He's a baller. Absolute baller.
He manages to upstage Grealish as well, as being the most likable guy in the team sometimes. That's the other thing. Somehow.
It's very crazy. Another baller we haven't mentioned is that of Andre Green. He hasn't had the best time at Aston Villa, but it's very easy to forget that he's literally just turned 21. And when Jack Grealish was 21, we weren't speaking about him in the same light that we are now. So Andre Green, he's got still got a long way to go. He scored his first goal of pre-season, a nice little finish against Charlton. Nicely set up by Jack Grealish, of course. A nice academy link up there because Keenan Davis also seemed to be floating around waiting for that final ball. But Andre Green's the one who buries it. And I think that goal was really important for him.
Yeah. My short words on Green there is a lot of people have been giving him stick, saying he's not quite ready. We've got to keep him in the squad next season, to be honest. He really needed that goal. And don't forget that he does score important goals. Got to remember that. I think he'll be a good option for us. Next season is the most telling one for him.
Ezri Konsa, on a final note, gave away quite a silly penalty. A bit of rawness there that we were not warned about, but it was always included in the description in the scouting reports, shall we say. He's more of a potential player from coming in from Brentford for 12 million. He made quite a silly tackle in the box. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that it would be silly to kind of assume that Konsa is going to be great for us next season because we just don't know yet. I think the biggest question mark is still who's going to be starting alongside Minks. I am ever so slightly worried that our defence might not be quite there because they haven't been tested yet, really. But you can't be in pre-season. And it's going to take time for centre-backs to get chemistry with each other. It always does. I wouldn't be surprised to see Hawes or Howes take that position with Ming's first couple of games of the season just yet. But I think give it some time and hopefully we'll see Konsa and Ming's gel together.
Yeah, we'll even see Bjorn Engels. He's in that conversation as well. You forget how many centre-backs, after having kind of no centre-backs, now we have handfuls of centre-backs. So it's a really difficult situation to try and sift through. James Chester as well. All these players in this conversation.
Yeah, Jimmy.
We'll find out more, I guess, when we play RB Leipzig. I was going to call them Red Bull, Danny, but they're not Red Bull Leipzig. You cannot call them Red Bull Leipzig. They cannot go by the moniker Red Bull Leipzig, but everyone does call them Red Bull Leipzig. It's actually Rasenballsport Leipzig.
That's right.
Commonly known as RB Leipzig. No Red Bulls involved. They're nothing to do with the energy drink except the fact that the energy drink owns them. They're playing a ground called the Red Bull Arena. And they're, of course, owned by Red Bull GmbH with a 99% share. Manager Julian Nagelsmann, the kind of wunderkind German football management. He's 32 and he's had a really impressive career so far coming in from Hoffenheim. He comes into Leipzig first season, I believe, Danny.
Yeah,
and so there's massive potential here. The players they've got, mate, they've just signed Ampadu on loan, brought in Ademola Lookman. They've got Tyler Adams, the younger American talent.
Yep.
Of course, Peter Glatzy back in goal. There's a lot to like here, mate. Timo Werner, of course.
Yeah, Timo Werner's still there, you know, as is Emil Forsberg and Yusuf Poulsen as well. Rasenballsport Leipzig, very, very good team. They finished third last season. They're in the Champions League. They are a team who were brutal. As soon as they made it up to the Bundesliga, they were like, look, we are going to chase the title. They did. They gave it a go. They gave it a good go when they first got promoted. This is a team who were disliked by a lot of Germans as well because it's just not the way to do things, aka spending a lot of money. But they didn't, you know, spend much money in comparison to like Premier League teams. and I think it's good to see that they've always tried to nurture young talent as well. I mean, they even had the Scottish lad who was down at West Brom, Ollie Burke. They had him down for a bit as well. They always managed to find sort of the younger players and get them doing well. Also keep a lookout for Jean-Kevin Augustin and Christopher Nkunku as well.
So it's a real big test for Aston Villa. Of course, quite a big test for Leipzig as well. I think we expected them to go on and on after getting into the Bundesliga that first time. They finished second in their first year, so I thought they'd be kicking on. They finished sixth the year after, then third last season. So, you know, the thought when they get promoted is this team has the backing, it has the philosophy, it's going to finish up there. It's going to be first, second every season. Not really been the case. So again, they do need to kick on. So they've still got something to prove. And this is going to be Villa's biggest test of pre-season so far. We don't know what team Leipzig would field. I think they're playing a few friendlies against this team, actually. Then I think Villa are playing a behind closed doors one as well, a few days after. Very much like the Q8 game that we shall not mention. We are not allowed to mention the Q8 game. But Aston Villa, yeah, big, big test this Saturday. The final preseason game. It's away in Leipzig. What are your expectations for this? What do you want to see? I think we're going to see maybe the final back line.
Yeah, I think so. I think we will see the team that, or I think we will see the back line that's going to start against Spurs. And I think that's what I want to see as well, basically. I think we really do need to now sort of nail down who's going to start. And I'm sure Dean Smith has an idea of that already. But we need to get that chemistry right before the Spurs game. And I think that's a game we're going to take seriously. I think we'll have a word with Leipzig as well to take it seriously.
I am kind of laughing that it's a Red Bull team. I do remember all the rumours that Red Bull were going to buy Aston Villa when Gerard Houllier was manager. Do you remember those?
Oh my God, yeah. No, it was a massive thing. People were worried that Villa Park was going to turn into like Red Bull Park or whatever, weren't they?
I guess that the worries aren't there with RB Leipzig because it was a very small regional club when they were bought. They've had to come right up the leagues.
Yeah, but they've got a big stadium though. That's the funny thing.
It's massive, isn't it? It's a new build.
Yeah, I think it's. I think it's one of the. I think it might be the biggest.
It's bigger than Villa Park.
I think it's the biggest stadium in traditional East Germany. I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, East Germany's always kind of been fairly sparse for football teams, hasn't it? Because of that whole divide of most of the big football teams, of course, based in West Germany.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And West Germany were always the stronger international team for sure. For various reasons. Be nice to kind of look into that a little bit further someday. But I think it's great. And if you read into East German football, it is quite interesting. Hence, I have affiliation of support for Union Berlin. So.
Oh yeah, of course, yeah. My team as well. I really rate them. But yeah, I was looking for RB Leipzig's kind of rivals. I was looking for Lucozade, Carabao. No teams owned by those energy drinks. So I think they're just kind of on their own and just disliked by most German clubs. There's no other energy drinks to kind of compete with in that area, mate. So it's just them existing.
Red Bull as a company do like investing in sport, don't they? They've got so many different sort of like weird sports tournaments around the world, haven't they? I mean, they've got their like derbies and stuff, haven't they? It's just one of the things which is good for their brand, I guess.
Quite innovative in Formula One. F1, so they've got a fair bit going for them. I get the criticism. It's not traditional, but, you know, these other clubs are spending as well without criticism.
Look, the Bundesliga will catch up. They'll catch up, you know, at some point or another, basically one of these teams will get, at some point or another, other teams in that league are going to think, hang on a minute, Premier League's getting ahead of us. We need to compete with Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund. So let's spend. It will happen at some point. Maybe not for St. Pauli, but for other teams, maybe.
Well, there's a lot to like about this Leipzig team, the team that actually field. Their manager's young. He's got a lot of potential. He's proven himself at a quite a high level as well. There's not much we can read into it. It's another preseason game. It's the biggest test. It's probably likely the final time we'll see. It is the final time we'll see Villa run out. It is probably the closest lineup that it's going to be to that starting lineup against Tottenham. Of course, when you start the Premier League fixtures, more so, it's probably a big day out for Aston Villa fans to go out and enjoy themselves in East Germany. And I think that's pretty much it, mate. Anything you wanted to note about Leipzig before we finish?
No, I think lastly, I think this is going to be the closest to the team that we're going to field for the rest of the season. So yeah, just keep an extra eye out for it. If there's one friendly you want to watch, it's this one.
So that's about all we have time for on this edition of the Hulkcast. We'll be back very soon with a review of Aston Villa's final friendly against RB Leipzig before the season begins. Of course, me and Danny will have to fit in the time to do a mega season preview podcast. We'll definitely be there with that. You can follow me at Jamin Rush and follow him at Rizal Journo. Follow us all together at 7500 to Holt, and we'll be back. And we'll be back very soon with another Holtcast. Goodbye, and thank you very much.